America is at the tail end of a war with Iran. This war has been very controversial. How constitutional is it? Was Iran the big threat it was made out to be? Where does America go from here? But there's one question that many commentators don't seem to be asking when they should. Could America afford this war? We'll examine the details and the reasons behind them on today's Trumpet World.
Which just seems so insane based on what he ran on. I mean, this is why a lot of people feel betrayed, right? He ran on no more wars and these stupid, senseless wars, and then we have one that we can't even really clearly define why we did it.
First, why did this happen? Now, in this case, there's a really simple answer. This happened because Israel wanted it to happen. This is Israel's war. This is not the United States' war. This war is not being waged on behalf of American national security objectives to make the United States safer or richer. This war is not actually even about weapons mass destruction, nukes, chem bio.
And then there was a report last night that the Pentagon asked the White House for $200 billion for Iran war supplemental. Can you confirm this? And can you explain why a package this large is necessary?
Well, as far as $200 billion, I think that number could move, obviously. It takes money to kill bad guys.
Tell us, and at what point you can tell us what the cost of damage done to U.S. facilities is because of this war.
Yeah, ma'am, thanks for the question. So for future posture in the Middle East, we don't know what that's going to look like. We don't know how we're going to design these
But
bases.
the damage to date, you do not have any cost estimate on it at all.
For the military construction, I don't have a cost estimate to provide you at this time.
A lot of controversy about the Iran war among the government, among MAGA, among commentators. It started at the end of February. We're in May now, and we're hearing never-ending claims of imminent peace, of victory. But has victory been achieved by the United States? What kind of victory is it? How do you measure victory? Welcome back to Trumpet World. I'm Mihailo Zekic, filling in for your regular host, Richard Palmer, and we're going to do a deep dive into the costs of the war, monetary and otherwise, for the United States. Now, if you just take President Donald Trump's word for how the war went, it would look like everything went as good as it possibly could have been, that it was one fantastic victory after another for the United States. The U.S. military was really riding high on this conflict. Soon after the war started, he said, and I quote, "The war was over within an hour of starting. We won." On April 7th, when the ceasefire was announced, he said the U.S., quote, "already met and exceeded all military objectives." Right after that, he gave an interview with Agence France-Presse, and he said he got, quote, "total and complete victory, 100%, no question about it," end quote. Lot of optimism there from the President of the United States, a lot of bombast and hyperbole you could expect. But what were all those goals he was referring to? We can look with the information we have available right now on whether those goals have actually been met for ourselves. Now, he's answered the question what those goals actually were several times with different answers, but they're all fairly related, them being that Iran could never pose a threat to the United States, to Israel, to the rest of the world ever again, that its military be neutralized, that its nuclear program be neutralized, that its path to a nuclear bomb is forever shut, that they can even create potentially conditions for the Iranian people to overthrow the Islamic Republic and bring freedom to Iran. Well, how has all of that been going? It's obviously no secret that the Iranian people have not revolted against the Islamic Republic. That, okay, yes, the U.S. killed Ayatollah Ali Khamenei on the first day of the war. His son has reportedly taken over, though his actual physical state of health and ability to lead has been called into question. It's fairly common knowledge now that the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, or the IRGC, Iran's main military, has taken over, and Iran is basically a military dictatorship right now. there isn't really much of an appetite among the average Iranian to try and stand up to this regime that has withstood the U.S. bombing and is still going strong on many counts. But what about the other goals? Okay, maybe the military has taken over the country, but are they able to be a threat to the United States anymore? Are they able to threaten the peace of the world? Can they have a nuclear weapon? Well, reports have been surfacing for weeks now that this optimism is not very well founded. Now, many of these reports, unfortunately, are leaks to the media from anonymous sources, and their information can't be verified with cross-referencing, etc. That's unfortunately the nature of the business. The government is usually tight-lipped about this sort of thing. But what can be said is for most of the contents of these reports, the U.S. government has done very little to dispute the numbers or claim them inaccurate or anything like that. So that in and of itself is telling. So regarding Iran's ability to attack the United States, now the U.S. is widely considered, for good reason, the world's most powerful conventional military. It's the world's number one superpower, world's largest economy, and it pumps a lot of that money into its military. Iran, meanwhile, it's certainly a power, but I don't think anybody would call it a superpower. It certainly has a much smaller military capability. And of course, the United States wasn't the only country attacking Iran in this war. It had obviously help from Israel. It's more and more information coming out from Saudi Arabia and some of these other Gulf states on how they were involved in the war. The active fighting between this war was between February 28th and April 8th, a nice clean chunk of time that we could compare. What have been the U.S. Intelligence assessments? Well, on May 7th, the Washington Post, citing a U.S. official, claimed, quote, Iran retains about 75% of its pre-war inventories of mobile launchers and about 70% of its pre-war stockpiles of missiles. The official said there is evidence that the regime has been able to recover and reopen almost all of its underground storage facilities, repair some damaged missiles, and even assemble some new missiles that were nearly complete when the war began, end quote. More recently, on May 21st, CNN reported that the U.S. intelligence community has assessed that about two-thirds of Iran's missile launchers have in one form or another survived the U.S. strikes, and about 50% of Iran's drone capabilities. That is a lot less rosy of a picture than what you would hear from the official press statements in the Pentagon or the White House. Okay, obviously, America's attacks did do some damage, but A, not nearly as extensively as, say, Iran being completely defeated. And also, it goes to show that during the war, Iran was significantly holding back. They weren't sending out everything they possibly could have in a desperate fight for life. If they wanted to do a round two, they very well could have. What about its nuclear program? Well, on May 4th, Reuters reported that the intelligence community has determined the current war, all 6 weeks or so of the bombing, has not actually adjusted their timetable for Iran to obtain a nuclear weapon. This time last year, a little bit over, the U.S. did its strikes on Iran's nuclear facilities. That pushed back the assessed breakout time for a bomb from 2 months to 6 to 12 months. Not that long of a time. This round of war, the nuclear facilities actually weren't some of the main targets, even though one of the stated aims, possibly the biggest stated aim of America's war to this day, is to make sure Iran cannot get a nuclear weapon. And that breakout time hasn't changed one bit. All that enriched material, as far as we know, still sits in the rubble of those nuclear plants. There was talk of the U.S. coming in to sweep all that up, to go underground and take it up in a commando raid. That would have obviously been very risky and would have been very controversial at home. But if that was your goal, to stop Iran from being able to obtain a nuclear weapon in the war, that probably would have been the only thing possible to do, and that hasn't been done. So go figure, the timetable hasn't changed. And We could add one more goal in there is to open the Strait of Hormuz, which was only closed in the first place because of the war, and it's still closed. It opens selectively when Iran wants to, when Iran wants to charge a few ships tolling, a few ships, and then it gets closed again, according to Iran. So really, all these different goals, America's achieved none of them. Sure, America has set back Iran's military capabilities slightly, but they've been here before. They've had a devastating war with Iraq decades ago, and they were able to bounce back from that to become the world's biggest state sponsor of terror. Sanctions, being an international pariah, not having access to the global economy, that's a way of life for them. And they've prepared for scenarios like this. So America has not achieved any of its goals, but again, at what cost? What has been the funding of this operation? Well, as you can imagine, the actual receipts from the Pentagon have been quite opaque. The War Department claimed earlier this month that the war cost $25 billion. A few days later, on May 12th, it jumped to $29 billion. As far as the U.S. defense budget goes, that seems like a pretty modest sum for everything that's happened, right? Is it accurate? Well, you saw in the montage there of Secretary Hegseth being quizzed for asking for $200 billion out of, not out of the current Pentagon's treasury, but an extra allotment from Congress on top of what they already have. Now, other anonymous officials within the U.S. government have since told media that number was estimated at a bit too high, but it still goes to show you what the Pentagon has been expecting this war to cost, and definitely what the analysts, what all of his advisors are telling Mr. Hegseth and what he's expecting to go forward. And of course, the actual new money immediately spent in this war is not the only money, whether by the U.S. government or the U.S. economy in general, that is being being spent by this war. The economist Justin Wolfers did a tally for the New York Times earlier this month, and he factored in things like the healthcare costs for injured veterans going forward, or the effects this war has had on the stock market, or on shipping insurance, etc. And he wrote, quote, "By my calculations, the bill for a typical American household likely runs to thousands or even tens of thousands of dollars," end quote. He said that the ultimate cost for this war is probably in the billions more than what is publicly being admitted, and I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. CNN, meanwhile, even just today, those reports came out that because of this war, the military is struggling to fund regular training exercises or maintenance of its still surviving equipment. Those factors are going to be those costs are going to be factoring into this war as well. And even the Washington Post put out another story of just the level of damage that Iran has been able to do to the United States and to its facilities, to its bases, to its ships, to its aircraft, etc. And they did a tally of at least 228 structures or pieces of equipment that have been damaged by the Iran strikes. That is far more than what the United States has been publicly admitting. And geographically, it also basically factors in all of America's military infrastructure in the Persian Gulf. What about munitions? I think this is probably the biggest eye-opener of this story. The Center for Strategic and International Studies, or CSIS, they published a report on April 21st. They analyzed America's key munition systems and how they were used and what they're looking like now. And it's some quite shocking statistics. They estimated that America, for Tomahawk missiles, had an inventory of about 3,100 before the war. And during the war, America spent possibly over 1,000. Patriot missiles, their estimated pre-war stocks are 2,330. And during the war, they estimated 1,060 to 1,430 were used during the war. About half, a little bit under maybe. This one's a shocking one. THAAD, the Terminal High Altitude Air Defense, probably the crown jewel of America's missile defense systems, and it's also, because of that, among the most expensive and the least plentiful. There was an estimated 360 batteries available pre-war, and America had used up a whopping 190 to 290 during the war. So almost all of our THAAD systems are not operational right now. And by CSIS's estimates, it costs about, what, $15.5 million to just get one THAAD unit functioning? $3.9 million for a Patriot system? These stocks will take about 4 to 5 years to replete. Again, within 6 weeks, and with none of the war goals achieved. What does that say for America's other adversaries? Last week, we put up an article on our website on how China may be planning on invading Taiwan this year. Does America have anything left to defend Taiwan or any other country that China or Russia or North Korea, any of those other American adversaries may try and attack? What is America supposed to do? Vice President J.D. Vance recently came out and said America can't afford to be the world's policeman anymore. Is that really disputable when you see statistics like this? And you can see that with the morale of the people on the ground. In the opening montage, we played some clips from figures like Joe Rogan, Tucker Carlson, who many consider some of the most influential libertarian isolationist America First commentators. And they are not wrong to say this was a shocker for a lot of people. According to a poll in the Washington Post, reported on May 1st, 6 in 10 U.S. adults think attacking Iran was a mistake. This is, for comparison, at the same level as the Iraq War was in 2006, 3 years after the initial invasion. This was the same level the Vietnam War was in 1971, about 15 years after the war started, after tens of thousands of people had already died in the war. This war, meanwhile, 6 weeks. No boots on the ground, 13 U.S. troops dead, not to demean those that sacrificed their lives in the conflict, but there's many more people probably murdered in American cities in that span of time than this war. And look at the public morale, how low it is. Now, a little bit of a caveat, a lot of people say that, again, this is a betrayal of their base. This is a betrayal on what Trump was elected on. The same poll suggested a vast majority of Republicans actually supported the war, and other polling has suggested similar results. So there is a bit of nuance there. But even as far as morale goes, could the president even continue this war for any longer, have any escalations whatsoever with so little public support? Even without the boots on the ground, even with the minimal casualties, even with many of these, many people not even knowing these numbers that I just mentioned, and in a midterm election year to boot, I think it's pretty fair to say that America's will to fight has been broken. And as I mentioned, other adversaries like China, they're looking at this and they know there's no coming back from this. And from Iran's perspective, this was part of their strategy. And I think it even played into their hands even better than they could have expected. The ceasefire, as of the recording of this episode, has not been signed yet, the lasting peace deal. But Iran knows that all it has to do is drag things out, cause a little more turmoil here and there, aggravate the president's approval ratings. And whether under President Trump or any other president, America is never going to do what it did to Iran again. Well, why is that? When America, the world's biggest superpower, goes after a small country like Iran, its strength is all spent in vain. Why is this the case? There is a big reason for it. A lot of people have been looking at this war through religious terms. A lot of people, the supporters of the war, think that, okay, Iran wants to attack Israel, the people of God, we need to support Israel. Other people, most prominently Pope Leo, has said that it's a sin for America to get in this war in the first place. But if people are going to be bringing religion into this conflict, it's good to know what the Bible actually says about this. And the Bible really holds the key to America's rise. We've talked about this many, many times before on this show. A deep dive on this subject is for another program, but Herbert W. Armstrong, a late theologian and the editor-in-chief of our predecessor magazine, The Plain Truth, he proved in his book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, many of you may have read it, that the United States, along with the British peoples, are actually descendants of ancient Israel, are descendants of the patriarch Abraham, to whom God originally made the great covenants of the Bible with. And nationally, physically, America is a recipient of those blessings. God promised Abraham in Genesis 12, 2-3, quote, "And I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you, and make your name great, and you will be a blessing, and I will bless them that bless you, and curse him that curses you." Another prophecy specifically to the people of Israel after they became a nation. God covenanted with them in Leviticus 26, 6-9, if they obeyed his ways, quote, "And I will give peace in the land, and you will lie down, and none will make you afraid. And I will rid evil beasts out of the land, neither will the sword go through your land. And you will chase your enemies, and they will fall before you by the sword. And 5 of you will chase 100, and 100 of you will put 10,000 to flight. And your enemies will fall before you by the sword, for I will have respect unto you." End quote. Now, what blessings, and when you compare that with America's history, we're coming into the 250th anniversary of America's founding, there's a lot of celebration of America's heritage. Doesn't that sound like what America went through the Revolutionary War, through its rise, expanding west with manifest destiny, through the Mexican-American War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II especially, all the display of pride in America's power on D-Day, attacking Japan? This describes America exactly, and it's because it's related to, and it's because it's the cause of why America became great in the first place. One more prophecy in Micah 5 verses 8 to 9 describes the end time nations of Israel as a lion. Mr. Armstrong writes in the United States and Britain prophecy, "This symbolism describes the last generation of Israel as a great power, as a lion among the other nations of the earth." Then he quotes verse 9, "Thine hand shall be lifted up upon thine adversaries, and all thine enemies shall be cut off." They were cut off from the beginning of God's birthright blessing on America and Britain, starting about 1803, through the First World War, the Second World War, until the turning point of the Korean War at the end of 1950. Since that time, however, these blessings are surely being taken away, and neither America nor Britain has come out on top in any major skirmish since that time. End quote. Why? Well, it's in the same chapter, Leviticus 26. God promised blessings for obedience to his ways, but he also promised curses on the nations of Israel, on America, on Britain, for disobedience. Leviticus 26, verses 14 through 16 read, "But if you will not hearken unto me, and will not do all these commandments, and if you will despise the statutes, or if your soul abhor my judgments, so that you will not do all my commandments, but that you break my covenant, I also will do this unto you. I will even appoint over you terror." Don't we see a lot of problems with terrorism today in America? Iran is the main sponsor of radical terrorism in the Middle East, worldwide, and America hasn't been able to defeat it. Continuing, verses 17 and 19 and 20, "And I will set my face against you, and you will be slain before your enemies. They that hate you will reign over you, and you will flee when none pursues you. And I will break the pride of your power, and I will make your heaven as iron and your earth as brass, and your strength will be spent in vain." And doesn't that look like a lot what we saw in Iran? Fleeing when none pursues them, the pride of America's power abroad and at home being broken, strength being spent in vain, immense strength, awesome strength, but all of it for nothing. And again, the reason for that is disobedience. And you can see that just from looking at what's going on domestically in the U.S. today. We recently had the Rededicate America rally in Washington to rededicate America to God. You look at the footage of that, there were a lot of empty seats there. President Trump didn't even bother showing up. He didn't even bother creating a new message. He just replayed an old message from another event. Similar things with the other members of his cabinet, if you want to talk about. And a lot of that religion in there is not the religion of the Bible that was being portrayed there for the people that did show up. If you want to talk about sins, there's an Ultimate Fighting Championship game being prepared for the president's birthday on the lawn of the White House. It seems like he's more excited about that, that more people are excited about that. Axios recently had an article about how America is in a state of sin right now. Even secular publications like that can see that. They specifically mentioned factors like the boom in people smoking marijuana and pornography and gambling. The president's been an advocate of reclassifying marijuana as something not so dangerous, as something more people can use. And these are maybe some obvious examples, but, and they certainly are growing and more blatant and more harmful, but America has been stuck in a sin cycle for decades and decades now. Mr. Armstrong was commentating on this decades and decades back too. He died in 1986, and he had this to say when the Bay of Pigs happened, the failed invasion of Cuba, in The Plain Truth. Quote, "Unless or until the United States as a whole repents and returns to what has become a hollow slogan on its dollars, in God we trust, the United States of America has won its last war. I said that when we failed to win in Korea. I say it again. Now that the United States government endorsed this Cuban fiasco, its president gave the go-ahead, and God, the God America has deserted, gave it its most humiliating defeat. What does the Cuban debacle mean? It means, Mr. and Mrs. United States, that the handwriting is on your... Now our editor-in-chief of the Trumpet, Gerald Fleury, he has continued this forecast since the Trumpet started in the early 1990s, and look at America's success rate in its wars in the Middle East, in Iraq and Afghanistan. Is it any surprise that morale is so low after 6 weeks of fighting in Iran? Now, it is important to note that the Trumpet does believe that Iran is an enemy worth confronting, that Iran is the source of so much of this world's evil, that it plays a major role in Bible prophecy, but it's not going to be America that finishes the job. Mr. Fleury's free book, The King of the South, explains more. We could put a link to that in the show notes. But until America starts looking to God in repentance and faith, it cannot win this war. It is impossible. Mr. Armstrong continues in The United States and Britain in Prophecy, quote, "Never did any people or nation spread out and grow so suddenly and rapidly into such magnitude of national power. Yet we are beholding before our very eyes the diminishing and evaporating of this national greatness, wealth, and power. In the case of Great Britain, it is disintegrating even more rapidly than it developed. Further down, and now, unless the people and the government of the United States will heed and take immediate and drastic action, the American nation is slated to go down even more suddenly to utter ignominy and loss of all national wealth, greatness, and power. And for the same reason." End quote. Now, the full magnitude of this hasn't hit yet. It's coming as The United States and Britain in Prophecy brings out, but doesn't that sound like the fiasco that we just saw in Iran? How much the world's number one superpower in 6 weeks was essentially beaten by Iran? And Mr. Armstrong, in those quotes, shows that gets to the heart of the problem. This isn't an issue because of mismanagement in Washington or geopolitical realities. This is about the nation as a whole. This is about the individuals. This is about you and me. And even if a nation as a whole doesn't turn around, even if the United States doesn't go in wholesale repentance to God, as Mr. Armstrong explains in the book, if an individual turns around, God promises to spare them from the curses that do hit the nation as a whole. So this is not just a message for Washington. This is a message for us, for our families. And so if you have one takeaway from this program, if you have any questions whatsoever, I highly recommend you order Mr. Armstrong's book, The United States and Britain. We offer it for free at our website, like we do all our literature. And it will explain a lot more than just what's happening in Iran. Again, Mr. Armstrong died in 1986, but the principles still apply today with what you're seeing in America's adventures in the Middle East, in the problems at home, and why things are getting worse, and no matter who's in charge, these problems don't necessarily seem to be getting... And no matter who's in charge, these problems aren't being taken away. You cannot afford not to understand what is in this book and act on it. That's all the time we have for on today's program. I'd like to thank Mr. Richard Palmer for allowing me to guest host for you today. I'd like to thank George Haddad, Matthew Friesen, and Victor Granados for engineering and production. And I'd like to thank you, the viewer, for tuning in. We'll be back with our regular Week in Review program on Friday, covering the important events of the week around the world and how they relate to Bible prophecy. Until then, keep watching your world.